This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca, brought to you by MTS.
Good evening, Manitoba, and for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek for this Wednesday, the 18th of February. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Find us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and of course, the website is illegalcurve.com. We start today, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets. A tumultuous couple of days since the Monday night victory for the Jets over the Edmonton Oilers. Of course, that game, the Jets winning in a shootout, getting the 2 points they needed. But a lot of injury troubles have befallen the Winnipeg Jets, namely the injury to Matthew Perreault that will see him out of the lineup for the next least probably 6 weeks till the end of the regular season.
Well, that's what we hear. I mean, the injuries haven't exactly been accurate accounts as of yet, Drew.
That's a very good point to make, Richard.
Yeah, so, he's out for a while, but I mean, who knows how long he's out for? It could be 4 weeks. It could be eight. I'm not a doctor, and I don't have personal knowledge of this, but based upon the other returns of the Jets players, I'd be a little more encouraged to think it'd be four.
Because everybody else has come back before their due date, as it were.
Expectations are expectations are within these time frames, because the media doesn't ask about it. Again, I don't have an issue with it. I'm just giving my opinion. The media doesn't ask about it because it's 2-3 weeks down the road and suddenly a guy's skating a bit. That's the way I think that they've done things, and so I would assume that would continue.
I would tend to think you might be on to something there, and Jets fans certainly hope that you are on to something there.
Yeah.
You know, we'll talk about the injury and how the Jets respond to it and how they, you know, deal with the forward lines and everything else coming up in the course of the show. Let's look at the wild card race as it currently stands right now. The Jets have a 6-point lead now on the Los Angeles Kings, as the Kings have overtaken the Minnesota Wild to move into ninth place in the NHL's Western Conference. How significant of an injury is this going to be for the Winnipeg Jets? Do you think that this causes them to swoon at all? Do you think that this causes them to, you know, maybe not necessarily fall out of the playoffs, but have that 6-point lead, which has been fairly consistent for the last number of weeks, you know, shrink down to 1 point or 2 points in the course of the next 3-4 weeks, Ezzy?
If the Jets end up missing the playoffs, you can't pin it on the Matthew Perreault injury. I think if you look at any team and their ultimate quest for that last playoff spot, Richie, or this push to the playoffs, you're never going to be able to pin it on one player. So to answer your question, absolutely not. I'm not saying that the Jets are guaranteed to make the playoffs, but I think the Jets' chances of making the playoffs, I know everybody likes to look at sports club stats and stuff like that. I mean, I'm just putting it out there in my, you know, it's got to be around, what, 80% their chances of making the playoffs. Again, I haven't checked it lately. But saying, Drew, that right now, with all of the points and the Jets, 5 of their last 7 games have gone to overtime. And the fact that the Jets are picking up points, and they went on a little slide after the All-Star break, but for the most part, they haven't gone on extended losing streaks. So for me, for this team to miss the playoffs, it's going to take a monumental losing streak. So I don't think it's going to happen. Matthew Perreault, well, it's pretty obvious, guys, what they lose here, and it was bad news that came out at the Iceplex today. They lose goal scoring. And since the All-Star break, the New Year's, you know, Perreault's been a point-a-game player, and, you know, Andrew Ladd's leading the team in goals, but he's right up there behind Ladd and Little and Wheeler as far as who's driving the offensive bus right now. So you lose Perreault, you lose goals. But this team is deeper than it was last year, and it's deeper on defense, and Paul Maurice talked about it. You know, Drew Stafford, he's an option tomorrow. We don't know. He's going to skate in Washington, but Buff will most likely move up to forward and play on the second line there with Scheifele and Frolik. So, sure, it's going to hurt you, and you're going to lose some goals, Richie, but as far as I'm concerned, the only way, you know, you're going to have this collapse is if you really go on collapse, obviously being an extended losing streak, but if you can survive a really tough part of the schedule, losing your top four defensemen, to me, that shows me that this team is not going to be terribly affected and go on some type of losing streak. You lose a really good player, but I don't think it's time to hit the panic button.
I mean, you have one player in reality who's really affecting your roster that's injured right now, and it's not an insignificant injury, and you certainly weathered the storm, as you mentioned before, But in Dallas, you have Nikushkin out, and you have Sagan out, and Minnesota, you have Zucker out, and Cook out. In L.A., you have Pearson out, and Voinov out for different reasons. I mean, Vancouver's BX out. Do you want to just go over the list of NHL injuries? I mean, excuses are great. They're for losers. So, yeah, certainly Perreault's injury hurts. It's one injury, though. I mean, Stafford's day-to-day here. You're going to skate tomorrow, so we'll see what happens. But Perreault's injury hurts. Certainly, there's a lack of depth up front and all those things, but Dustin Byfuglien moving back up front, he played exceptionally well, I thought, during his short return to the forward position, what, 2 weeks ago?
Prior to the Evander Kane trade.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't particularly, it's an issue. Yeah, does it happen at left wing where they're particularly thin and only after Andrew Ladd they really have not much at left wing? Yeah. But, I mean, they've been playing without a third-line right-winger for years now. So, I mean, there are certain holes in the roster that have existed, and it's a significant injury, but it's not insurmountable. And Matthew Perreault was a big factor in terms of the offense and driving that line and playing with Mark Scheifele and really being the key to the line. But this one injury, and I'm considering one because it seems like Stafford is day-to-day, shouldn't be the end of the Jets season.
If Stafford's skating tomorrow, which he is, and that's what Paul Maurice said, he's going to take the pregame skate, you figure if he's out tomorrow, he's probably back for Saturday in Toronto.
Everybody's prone to overreact. Sky is falling. It's one injury. Again, main guy. You have a ton of depth on the back end. You can certainly afford to move Byfuglien up. Is there that much of a drop-off from Perreault to Byfuglien, if at all? And is there that much of a drop-off from the third pairing to the new third pairing? I don't know. I don't see it being as much of an issue as other people do. It's an issue, no doubt. But I don't think this is the cause for, as Tezzi's point, if there is the Jets fade off here and lose a bunch of games, I don't think it'll be directly attributable. It's never going to be directly attributed to one thing, but this particular thing is going to be an issue, but only a factor amongst many.
And Rich, you make a really good point, too, going back to what you were saying about other teams and their injuries. You can even take it further to the top teams. Look at Anaheim. Sammy Vatanen is out.
Yeah.
Look at St. Louis. Kevin Shattenkirk is out right now.
Matt Beleski in Anaheim, too,
is out. So, I mean, you have significant injuries, really, on every team in the National Hockey League. I mean, Washington, actually, Dmitry Orlov was injured earlier in the season. Washington's actually kind of one of those exceptions. They don't have very many key injuries. Most teams, though, have key injuries. Pittsburgh obviously lost Dupuis for the season. Mm-hmm. Ole Matt is out. You can go up and down the NHL.
Ellis, Volchenko. I mean, you want to keep going?
You can go. Every team, Rich, again, you find the odd team like Washington that doesn't have significant injuries.
Chicago's all right. But
And Chicago or this team or that team. But for the most part, you got to deal with these injuries. And the Jets, to me, have shown the ability to handle adversity more so this year than in any other year.
I agree with that.
You know, going into Chicago in mid-January, beating Chicago for the third time in Chicago and then Perreault getting injured, this team, I don't think, will all of a sudden have this big fall-off or this big drop-off or letdown or whatever you want to call it. They know what Matthew Perreault means to the team. It's a terrible injury. To everybody was expecting today maybe he was going to miss two games, Perreault, that is, maybe three games. You know, the walking boot was off. Even in the morning, it started to look more promising. It's a serious injury. And they know that he's going to be a significant subtraction to the roster. They just got to pick up that offense from the other guys in the dressing room.
This is NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're talking about the wild card race and the impact of the Matthew Perreault injury. Let me ask you guys this. LA now won 5 games in a row. How much of a threat are they, in your mind, to coming up and being involved in the wild card race?
Well, they're a threat. I mean, if they win all 3 of their games, they would take out the Jets. The Jets would still be okay because they're ahead of Vancouver, Calgary, and San Jose, and who knows what would happen down, over the course of those 3 games. But they're a threat, Drew. I mean, we watched them a week and a half ago look tired and look slow and turn it around and get some confidence and are able to kind of dictate the pace a little more, play their game, and you watch them and they look pretty good. It's amazing how quickly a great team can just turn it on. That's really what's happened here. They're going to add a defenseman. You hear about Roman Polak. We'll talk about that later on. Cody Franzen, I thought, would be a nice fit. He already went to Nashville, which we'll talk about later on as well. But, of course, they're the real. I mean, every team behind the Jets, to me, is serious. I mean, Colorado, not so much. And Dallas, because of no Sagan, although Jamie Benn looking spectacular last night, you'd say what you wonder about. I thought Minnesota was done long ago, but they're still in it. So they're dangerous. I mean, this is they take no team lightly. And because they play each other every night, And then the heavy schedules in the division and in the conference, it's hard. And a lot of 3-point games. I mean, there's no easy matchups right now.
Yeah, Richie, they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. So obviously you're scared that they're starting to win some games. As Drew mentioned, they've won 5 games in a row. But what LA, one major thing that LA doesn't have going for them is that they're chasing. And so teams like the Jets, who are in a playoff spot right now, you might have three games in hand on the Winnipeg Jets, but you're trying to pick up those points.
Well, the Jets have 2 points behind San Jose with three games at
right,
nine.
San Jose
is not very good.
Well,
they're not very good. I mean, let's be honest.
The Sharks have the entire year been inconsistent.
They're not good. In my opinion, they're not that good. LA is better.
I don't think they're a threat, but again, you're looking at a Western Conference right now where, you know, aside from three teams there at the bottom, because we know the Dallas Stars, the Minnesota Wild, they're hanging around here. Mm-hmm. So you get in, Richie, and I know the San Jose Sharks, I'm looking at, you know, a few teams that could easily get in there over San Jose. So you're talking Minnesota, LA possibly, and Calgary and Vancouver, nothing's guaranteed. But the LA Kings are chasing right now, and you mentioned that they might want to acquire a defenseman. You know, and again, you know, just quickly here, that March 1st game coming up in two Sundays between Kings and that's an afternoon game, the Kings and Jets.
The day before the trade deadline.
You think that's going to be a decent game?
Yeah, I think that'll be a hell of a hockey game. You're exactly right about that one. That one's circled on the calendar, especially when you look at the playoff standings as they currently are.
Yeah, but again, I really think, you know, the way the Jets have been playing here, and this is the first time that we've seen them play this well, Richie, from start to finish. Obviously, they started off losing four of their first five games, but the way they've played really since then, and especially, you know, since I'd say around the mid-November to late November mark, this is a different team. So, yeah, the Kings are, I think, making some people nervous. The Wild are making some people nervous. Devan Dubnyk has really, I mean, surprised everybody mm-hmm. with the way he's played. But again, the Jets are not having to chase other teams. They're being chased. And as we know, it's a lot easier when you know, even though the Kings, you know, you look at those three games in hand, you say, well, that's 6 points right there. Well, they got to win those games.
Yeah, of course. And that's exactly right. And I just don't think the NHL is that strong this year. I don't think there's that many really, really scary teams. So I think the Jets are in good position right now. And this injury I don't think this injury is going to be the end of the team in terms of the playoffs. I don't think the sky is falling by any means.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at some trade options for filling the spot of Matthew Perreault and just adding to the Jets roster in general. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. Some surprises are good, like a big comeback win. Some aren't, like internet overage charges. That's why MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by surprise overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Serious controversy here in between commercial breaks on NHL Midweek with the Legal Curve. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. And in keeping with, you know, our juvenile behavior, it has to do with a sour soother and an offer extended, perhaps delayed, by Mr. Remus.
It wasn't perhaps delayed. It was delayed.
It was delayed. And Mr. Remus is getting a little defensive about Richard's response to the delayed offer.
Look, you want the sour soother or don't? I went out in the minus 40 weather.
Yeah, but you went out for yourself in the minus 40 weather.
Right.
And he was carrying four of them and asked for, oh, can I have
I got
them?
Four.
He said no.
That's how many I wanted
you're,
to
you're,
have.
How old are you, Remus? You're what, 27 years
28.
Old? 28 years old? Four large sour soothers for a 28-year-old is a lot of candy.
I think just regular soothers would have been the fit there.
You know what?
what about the amount of noise that Remus was making during the last segment? Drinking a Slurpee.
He was making a lot of slurping noise. Yeah.
You know what? You can't just expect me to hand over the sour soothers.
No, no one's expecting you to hand over the sour soothers. The, you know, look, we're not at the age where, you know, spending 5 cents on a piece of candy was a lot of money. We're now a little bit more financially free.
I don't
where
care.
If you go out and you buy four sour soothers, you could think to yourself, hey, I'll buy four more, and we can all share in a communal eating of sour soothers.
Have a good chew.
Says the guy who brought in one coffee.
Yeah, good point.
I brought in four coffees last week.
He did, that's true.
Yeah.
Come on, so Richie, Remus wouldn't give you one of his sour soothers.
I wanted them. What do you mean? I didn't ask him for half of his coffee.
No, I understand.
I would have poured it for you.
If you listened to this conversation and had to say which one of the four of us is an only child,
You would definitely say it's Remus.
That's true. You would. You would.
When in fact, the only child here is me.
That's true.
And I'm the more. And I.
But Remus is the only child in the room.
Very well done. Okay, cut your mic now, Remus. We're done with you. Let's talk about the upcoming NHL trade deadline. A little less than 2 weeks away, rather. Monday, the 2nd of March, will be on air, of course, with a special edition of NHL Midweek.
You better not be bringing up Daniel Winnick again.
Oh,
well,
God.
That's my question. That was where I was going to start. Why is Daniel Winnick, a guy who's got 6 goals, getting all this attention?
Because he plays on the Toronto Maple Leafs. The only franchise giving the Edmonton Oilers a run for its money in terms of joke status.
Okay, I gave you guys, Richie, I gave you guys a list of left wingers that I thought could slot in on the third line there. And now, you know, I saw Gary Lawless was talking about it too. Matt Calvert was one of the guys, you know, you said you agreed with. There was a couple of guys, Teddy Purcell you didn't like. I think Korpikoski, Hoffman, you liked, right?
You see Teddy Purcell play on Monday?
Okay, no, I'm saying you, but no, you didn't like that anyways.
No one did. He was invisible.
But you didn't like that anyways. You're saying Korpikoski. Let's use Matt Calvert. Let's use Calvert as a good example. A 25-year-old Brandon boy, you know, who could really slot in on the third line, could offer some goal scoring, and offer some grit. If you're going to go out and get a guy like that, you were going to go out and get a guy like that, Drew, before Perreault went down. I don't think Perreault's injury is going to really force Chevy to do anything. We know he's patient. We know he's going to wait for the right trade. So I think people are now starting to get a little overzealous and thinking that there's going to be some other player out there, Antoine Vermette. First off, he's a center. The Jets don't need a center. So, Richie, I think...
He can play both. He can play wing and center, but they're not going to be paying what other teams are paying for him.
Right. So, I mean, if you're talking about what are the Jets going to do before the trade deadline, you're talking about probably adding a top-nine winger, but most likely a guy that'll slot in on the third line there. And what are you going to have to give up for a guy like that? Probably not a first-rounder, maybe a second-rounder and a prospect?
Yeah, I guess it depends on the term. In terms of term, you know, if you're talking about Korpikoski, he's got 2 years after this year, so it's a different package than it would be for a pending UFA.
Sure.
Right, and so a guy like Daniel Winnick, I mean, I wouldn't give up more than a. If I'm a really good team, the tops I would even consider is third, which would be the end of the third round. I wouldn't go above a third round pick for Daniel Winnick, and really, it's be a
he's
fourth
a rental.
Round pick.
That's why I'm hearing all this talk about second round pick for Daniel.
Well, who do you think's floating that, Drew?
Well, I know who's floating, and it's obviously coming out of the Leafs that you know are driving that bus to try and drive up interest, and that's what it's going to cost to acquire him. The guy's got 6 goals, and you could have had, and anybody could have had him in July.
You know,
has
6 goals right now. Chris Thorburn has 6 goals, so you can say whatever you want, and you guys know I'm a big Thorbs fan.
We do know. But you called him Thorpe. So.
Yes.
You guys.
He calls Ezra Ezzy, so, you know, it works out
hey,
well.
You know. So if you're talking about, you know, what player is out there and what you have to pay, and I agree with Richie, he's a rental, and you have to factor that in. Now, Drew Stafford, also, you could call him a rental, but I think with Drew Stafford, there's still the opportunity, again, you know, I'm not saying that this is currently going on, but I'm saying that I think there's always the possibility, I mentioned this when the big trade was made, that the Jets re-sign him, knowing that Michael Frolik is also a pending free agent. So I think, you know, Richie, you got to look at, like you said, the term, and if the guy's a pending RFA or a pending UFA, and also, you know, is the player going to fit in? And, you know, this isn't anything against Daniel Winnick. I'm just saying, for some reason, for the last 3 weeks, everybody thinks Daniel Winnick is coming to Winnipeg.
Well, because the Jets had interested him in the summer, Izzy. That's why it's, you know, it's based on that foundation, I think, that people think that the Jets are going to acquire Daniel Winnick. Now, they didn't sign Daniel Winnick. I don't think Daniel Winnick would want to sign here long term. So if you're acquiring him, it appears that it would be for a short term. And if you know that, why would you give up anything more than a fourth rounder?
Regardless of the Jets, you know, factor in here and the fact that most people would say they are looking to acquire a depth forward and everything else.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely a buyer, Drew.
I get that. I'm not disputing that. The fact that Daniel Winnick is a top people's lists boggles my mind. To me, there's a lot of players.
Well, it speaks to how there's really nothing out there, too.
I know there's nothing out there, but it seems to me...
And it speaks to the media machine of Toronto.
Well,
how much more are we going to talk about the Leafs and Phaneuf and Kessel? I mean, it's nauseating.
Well, a little bit later on in the show.
Yeah, right? I know. That's true, yeah.
I was away. I got away from all of it. I didn't have to put up with it on Saturday, so it doesn't matter. But, I mean, to me, a guy that, like, Jiří Tlusty, he's actually scored 13 goals this year. He's got more than twice as many goals as Daniel Winnick has, is a guy who's a lot more interesting and should be talked about a lot more than Daniel Winnick. And I can't wrap my brain around why there's that much of an appeal to this guy.
Well, again, and Richie started to just answer it because Toronto has lost pretty much every single game over the last 2 months, and now it's a fire sale, and nobody's really. I mean, you hear Bob McKenzie talking about this on TSN, the only untouchable, if there is an untouchable in Toronto, is Morgan Riley. So that means that Phil Kessel, Dion Phaneuf, Tyler Bozak, James Van Riemsdyk. Well, exactly, right? So, I mean, the reason why a guy like Daniel Winnick, Richie mentioned it, there was some interest in the summer. I mean, the guy's a big body. He plays a lot on the penalty kill, which I don't think there's a need for that because I think the Jets, you know, with guys like Blake Wheeler and Andrew Ladd, they don't really need another guy to play on the penalty kill. To me, you're trying to add some size and an upgrade on goal scoring, but I don't think he significantly upgrades that on,
for example,
Chris Thorburn. No, I don't think he does.
Well, I mean, a guy I think actually fits really well into the Jets, what the Jets want. I don't know if I've heard his name, so you can. I'm not reading every rumor out there, so I'm gonna, you know, I'm kind of tossing this out.
That's right, Richie. It's a fresh rumor.
Maybe we're starting a rumor. That's Eric Cole. And I think Jim Neal wouldn't have an issue trading in the division the team he's chasing because I don't think he particularly thinks this is the team that he's catching.
Sure.
I think Jim Neal doesn't care. I think he's building for the future in any event. I think he doesn't care about trading with the – I think he sees big picture. Jim Neal, in my mind, sees big picture. Eric Cole, what do you like about him? He's an up-and-down winger. He goes to the net. He's big body. Can play the Jets style. Chase, he's a good skater. Physical. I mean, not as physical as he once was, but physical nonetheless. Plays the left side. Can play the right side, too. Up and down winger, which is what they like. And played for Paul Maurice. Does that not fit everything? And pending UFA. Does that not fit everything you're looking for, criteria-wise? To me, that's the guy that fits in the best on the market. I don't know if he's on the market. I'd be surprised if he wasn't. Dallas isn't looking short-term as much as they're looking long-term. They have the building blocks there. So maybe they want a younger player. Maybe they have interest in one of the Jets' prospects or a pick. I think that guy, to me, if I look at the rosters around the league, that's the guy I think fits into exactly what the Jets would be looking for.
15 goals this year, 16 goals last year. 2 years previous to that were a little bit weak, but he certainly knows how to put the puck in the net. He had 35 goals in Montreal not that many years ago.
Does he not have some remaining...
Nope.
Is he a
end
UFA?
End of his contract, yeah.
So, to me, I agree with you, Rich. I think he would be a good fit. The only thing to me that really is going to hinder that happening is the fact that the Stars are only 4 points out of a playoff spot right now.
Yeah,
so if you're close to the deadline, and let's say you're either 4 points or maybe you're a little closer, I know that, you know, with Sagan out, it's going to be tough, but maybe he says, well, I need Eric Cole. I need him there. But
two weeks from now, it might not be an issue.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? So looking at it from the flip side, that's the only thing I can
think of.
From
my perspective, that would be the guy the Jets would be interested in.
What about Sean Bergenheim? We've heard, I don't know if you guys talked about this on Saturday's show or not.
We broached it. I mean, clearly you didn't listen to the podcast, so we won't broach that topic. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Bergenheim is a guy, Drew, that you know could be helpful. And of course, you see that, you know, he's a stats guys love him and such, and he can be a useful player. But I don't know if he necessarily fits into what the Jets do as much as a guy like, for example, Eric Cole does, or some of the other players we've discussed on the show. So yeah, he's certainly available. I mean, yeah, and we talked at length, Drew, on Saturday's show about Gerard Gallant calling him, saying he's not trying.
Yeah,
saying he's not giving 100%,
and then his agent fired back, of course.
Yeah, you know, I like the candidacy. I like the candid talk from Gerard Gallant, and I like that his agent's defending the player. So I have no issue with either of those things. But he would be a useful player, certainly an upgrade over what they have. But I think there's other guys. I think the Jets would probably be targeting at this point. And to be honest, like, Florida's in a race too here, Drew. So
2 points behind Boston.
So they probably.
Well, he's not playing, though.
No, I know. That's what I mean. So wouldn't they want to get something done quickly, sooner rather than later, because they're in a race still?
You would think so. Let me ask you this question and quickly. If the Jets don't add anyone, if March 2nd comes and goes and they don't add anybody else, is that acceptable to you?
Yeah, why not? I mean, they made a huge trade, seven-player trade,
well,
Richie.
Well, who's playing left wing? That's what I want to ask you. Who plays left wing?
On the third line?
On the second line and the third line.
Oh, right now, Ladd is your only regular left winger.
Right, and most likely tomorow, you'll see Michael Frolik play left wing.
That's not as effective on the left side.
But I'm just saying, that I'm just answering your question.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Answer the question. Right. But, I mean, it's also a rhetorical question. I mean, who's going to be doing that?
Right, so you're going to see Michael Frolik there on the left side, and you had Matthew Perreault already, by the way, mm-hmm. playing left side, which he's not. People forget that. He's a natural center.
He's been good, and he hasn't complained about it, and he's been very good on
right.
the wing.
So, I mean, I would think, Richie, that the lineup that you see tomorrow, which is most likely going to be Frolik, Scheifele, Byfuglien, and then you're going to have Thorburn, Lowry, and
Stafford.
Most likely,
if Stafford's healthy. Or who else.
Right, and then you're putting Klingberg
Klingberg's
in.
A left-side guy, though. The left-winger, I believe.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
So I mean, then you have
Thorburn on the right side. But, I mean, then you're also talking about Klingberg on and Thorburn on the same line, which would be your third line. Is that what I'm...
Yeah. Yeah, right. And, I mean, everyone's expecting that tomorrow it'll be Gagliardi, Lowry, and Thorburn, and Klingberg, Slater, and Peluso. I'm not sure why you bring... You know what Gagliardi can do. I don't know why
either
you don't bring
way,
up...
Drew, either way, Drew. I mean, let's be honest here. Either way, you're not talking about guys who are going to dent the back of the net.
No, I don't dispute that. But I'd rather see them give Klingberg the opportunity for at least a little bit, you know, more than 4 minutes of ice time a game rather than Gagliardi.
I mean, you know what you're getting at the same time. And these guys talk to Keith Cambridge every day. So if he was going to be that useful, wouldn't he have been up long ago? Gagliardi's already been on waivers twice this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, let's call it what it is. They're going to the well because they have to. They don't have a choice here.
Sure. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in John Walton, radio broadcaster on the Capitals Radio Network. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Shortly after 7:30 in the evening, Richard Pollock on my left, Ezra Ginsberg on my immediate left. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he's the play-by-play broadcaster on the Capitals Radio Network, John Walton. Good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Good evening, fellas. Good to be with you.
John obviously brought you on to talk about tomorrow evening's Jets-Capitals game, the first time these two teams have met each other this year. It seems not that long ago we used to see each other six times a year when we were both in the Southeast Division, the long-lamented Southeast Division. You know, this Capitals team is just, you know, churning along. Big win last night in Pittsburgh. Is this the best Capitals team of the last 5 years?
Well, I guess that's probably a tough question. There certainly have been a lot of ups and downs over the last 5 years. I think it's probably a little premature to compare it with a team that, you know, won a President's Trophy back in 2009-10. But I think in terms of structure and in terms of balance and in terms of getting very good goaltending and the deepest defensive core this team has probably had, I'd say, in a decade, and then combine that with Alex Ovechkin leading the team in goals and leading the NHL in that department, and then you also have Nicklas Backstrom leading the NHL in assists. So, they're not without their holes. I mean, up front, it's been good. I wouldn't say it's been overwhelmingly good. There's still some questions to try and sort out and maybe some holes to fill before the trade deadline, but I think it's been a very good run, a very good California trip that ended in Pittsburgh. And I know California and Pittsburgh aren't related, but they were to us on this trip anyway. Coming back and being able to get 2 points in Pittsburgh last night, big coming home to see the Jets tomorrow.
John, obviously, you know, we're going to ask you about, number eight here, Alexander Ovechkin, and we're not going to talk about, you know, his recent little thing with Ryan Getzlaff. We're going to stick to the ice here. When you talk about Alexander Ovechkin, he's obviously scored last night against Pittsburgh. He's got 4 goals in his last 3 games, 37 goals on the season. Probably going to get to 50 goals again. But Alexander Ovechkin, because you see him on a nightly basis, what kind of influence has Barry Trotz had on Alexander Ovechkin?
A very good one, but I would say even further than that, besides the relationship that they have built with Alex this year, to me, it's been about the relationship that he's built with the younger guys, with Andrei Burakovsky and with Evgeny Kuznetsov. And you see some of that on-ice leadership night in and night out, and you see, you know, kind of taking him under his wing off the ice as well. And, you know, I mean, this to me has been a great year for Alex. I think not only offensively, but off ice as well. And to be in a position with this team, I mean, look, Alex is not getting any younger, and neither are, you know, a lot of the quote-unquote young guns that led this team to, you know, that President's Trophy I talked about before. Alex is going to be 30 by the time next season starts, and you know, there aren't too many guys that are still scoring 50, 60 goals a season once you get into your 30s. And, you know, for him to be at the absolute top of his game, I think right now overall, he's had better goal scoring seasons, but you're right. He's probably going to get to 50 goals. And in doing so, a plus minus that, and I'm not a firm believer in plus minus, mind you, but everybody made such a big deal about his minus last year, you know, plus 12, plus 13. Coming into the game against Winnipeg tomorrow night. He's committed defensively. He's been tremendous offensively. I can't think of a game where you just, or even a small little stretch, that it hasn't really been Alex's thing here, this little stretch, this game, this road trip. the last month, he's the best player in the NHL. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
John, you talk about Ovechkin, and Ezra mentioned Nicholas Backstrom there, and Andrei Burakovsky is a guy you mentioned, but our listeners may not know a lot about him. Can you kind of give us a background on what his game is all about?
Well, Andrei just turned 20, and first-round pick of the Capitals a year ago. I spent the year last year with Erie in the OHL, and his line mate was Connor McDavid, so that's good work if you can get it.
Yeah.
And in being able to produce, I think both Connor and Andrei benefited from playing with each other. And then Andrei, the question back to training camp was whether or not he would make the team or whether he would go to Hershey. He was able to go to Hershey if that was the move, and it wasn't. He had a great training camp. He had a great October, November. Really fell off offensively in the second quarter of the year, didn't even play a lot. In fact, as recently as Saturday, was a healthy scratch in L.A. and then had his first two-goal game of his NHL career on Sunday in Anaheim, and he did it with a dad's trip this weekend, most of the fathers representing players and even staff on this trip, which was just an unbelievable 4 days in California. But to be able to do that with his father there, and at least for now, I would expect to see him on the top line tomorrow. He was there last night in Pittsburgh. Probably will be against Winnipeg tomorrow. But that's a real question for this team. Do they put number 65, do they put Andrei Burakovsky in that top line role come playoff time? That might be a stretch for a kid that just turned 20. Same question could probably be asked of Evgeny Kuznetsov. If the Capitals are looking to add guys at the deadline, I think those are two places that they're probably going to look.
Yeah, John mentions the dad's trip, and you posted a nice picture, John, on your Twitter of you and your father. That was a nice shot. We'll retweet that out there. John, I watch this team, which is different than, to me, is different than in past years, and the thing that stands out to me most is I feel like the roles of the players on the team are more defined than they've been in past years. Would you agree with that?
I think so. I think defensively, I mean, if you look at where the Capitals were last year, there were a lot of guys that were playing above their level, put into positions that, quite frankly, weren't fair. I'm thinking of a guy like Connor Carrick, who, at 19 years of age, was not ready to play at the NHL level. I think he will be. I think he's got tremendous upside, but because of the lack of defense on this team and the lack of construction on the back end, and sometimes not even implemented correctly, you've got the move that was made right away when Brian McClellan came in and became general manager, signed Brooks Orpik, signed Matt Niskanen. Mm-hmm. He saw what the weakness was. It was addressed. And overnight, literally overnight in July, the roster changed to the point where Mike Green is now a third pair defenseman on this team. He and Jack Killen, he and Nate Schmidt have been the third pair. Yep. You've had all season long. It's been Brooks Orpik, John Carlson, and then it's been Carl Alsner and Matt Niskanen. That structure that was implemented has changed this team dramatically for the better. And I think we saw that from opening night all the way through to today. And I think the offense hasn't been as overwhelming, but on the top line obviously has been. But I think that's the one weakness, if there is one, where the Caps right now is trying to figure, how to roll those four lines and get consistent offense. They haven't been as consistent as they probably want them to be, but they certainly have, for the most part, I think have carried the mail, and certainly on the road trip they were very good.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is John Walton, radio broadcaster on the Capitals Radio Network. John, I have to ask you about Braden Holtby. Sort of, came onto the scene, very strong numbers, very strong performance a couple years ago. Had a couple down years. Last year wasn't great for Braden Holtby. Wasn't great for the Caps in general. This year he's been dynamite. He's top five, top 10 definitely in most of the goaltending categories. 27 wins, 12 losses, 9 overtime defeats this season. Why has Braden Holtby been able to bounce back so well this season?
Well, it's a lot of reasons. And first of all, when you talk about Braden Holtby, you have to look beyond just last year and this year. You have to look back to his earliest days in the NHL. He mm-hmm. was called up for the 2012 playoffs. All he did in the first round was go beat the defending champs and the defending Conn Smythe winner and Tim Thomas in 7 games. And he was within 1 game of beating Henrik Lundqvist in the next series. Braden has always been a tremendous goaltender. And what I think was troubling last year, and calling it for what it was, I mean, Adam Oates misused him last year. He absolutely did. At mid-year, with a couple of shaky starts, he jeopardized Braden's confidence. You brought up Philip Grubauer from Hershey, and Philip is a great NHL-in-waiting goaltender, but they had 3 healthy goaltenders on the roster for 35 days. There wasn't enough practice time to go around. Braden never had a crossword to say about the situation. Other guys did. Michael Neuwirth did, a few others. But it was not a tenable situation, and it ruined Washington's season last year. Any chance they had of being in the playoffs, I think, was jeopardized by that move. It shot Braden's confidence down to the lowest level I've seen it. I've known Braden since he came in as a first day as a pro in Hershey back in the American Hockey League. This year, what Brian McClellan and Barry Trotz both did, and they said in July, the day that they were announced as the general manager and the head coach, that Braden was the number one, and he was going to play 60 games, and they were committed to Braden being the guy. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what that difference has made, and the goaltending coach coming in, and Mitch Korn, has been tremendous as well. But I think Braden is in a much better place mentally. I think he has always had the ability. I think Mitch Korn has worked on tweaking his game a little bit, but there haven't been a lot of big changes. Braden is a big-game goaltender, and the thing is that when I've heard that question a lot of times you hear, he had a down year last year, but, you know, there were a lot of circumstances around it. Braden has always been Braden, and I think now being given that opportunity, keep in mind that, you know, even before Adam Oates was coaching here, there was always somebody else. There was Semyon Varlamov. There was Michael Neuwirth. There was a glut of very good young goaltenders here. Braden never really got the chance to be the guy. When he's finally been given that chance, he's been terrific this year.
John, I had a chance to watch last night's game between mm-hmm. the Capitals and Penguins, and it was an awesome game. Good it was game, tied yeah. 1-1 for most of the game. And, you know, I've watched this team quite a bit this year on TV, obviously, when we're not watching the Jets. And the line to me that I continuously love to watch and am impressed by is the Eric Fehr line. Obviously, we got to get that question in for the Winkler boy from Manitoba, Eric Fehr, alongside Brooks Like and Joel Ward. Joel Ward getting the game-winning goal, his fourth game-winning goal of the season. I know these guys seem to do it year after year, and obviously Eric Fehr, it didn't work out for him the first year that the Jets were back, but how important is that third line to what the Capitals are trying to do heading into the playoffs?
Well, Eric Fehr has reinvented himself, and, you know, in watching what he's been able to do last year, something that occurred last year under Adam Oates was switching Eric Fehr to center, a position that he mm-hmm. had never played before, and that was a great move. This was something that, in looking at, very difficult for someone who has been a winger his whole life to be able to step in and take draws. And, you know, I think was typified not in the Pittsburgh game last night, but the last time that we saw Pittsburgh in late January, Eric Fehr won 11 of 12 draws against Sidney Crosby. He has come so far in such a short amount of time, and to be able to hold down that third line, checking line, when he first came up through junior, 50-goal score and all of that, I mean, a lot of people thought, that was going to be his destiny. His role, I think, has changed at the NHL level, but my goodness, has he been good for this team. And Joel Ward had a pretty good trip on this line as well. He had a couple of game-winning goals in the four games on the trip. But, you know, that line is produced, and Eric has had a whole lot to do with that. And it was great to see his dad, by the way, make it in from mm-hmm. Winkler to come to Southern California. It was a little warmer in Los Angeles and over the weekend, just for the record. Just thought I'd throw it in there.
Just a bit, John. Final question. Seems like we're ending most of our interviews these days with this final question, and you mentioned it a bit earlier in the interview, but maybe the Caps need for some help up front and certainly the depth on the back end they haven't had in some time. Are they looking for top six help, do you think? And if so, is it center or wing?
Well, it could be both. And you know, here's what you have right now. I mean, you've got Alex Ovechkin on the left side and Nicklas Backstrom at center, first line, locked in, done deal. You have on the second line, it's been Marcus Johansson, Evgeny Kuznetsov, and Troy Brouwer. And it's been a pretty good line, and all have had their moments. But, you know, you can be gone for a couple of games in terms of point production and then come back in a big way. But I think the question is Evgeny Kuznetsov ready to take on the New York Rangers or the New York Islanders or the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round or two of the Stanley Cup playoffs? If the answer is yes, maybe you hold your cards and you say, okay, maybe we're good to go. If the answer is no, then you're probably looking for, and I will throw this out from a Capitals perspective, but Mike Knubel, a guy who came in and played on that right side with Alex and Nicky in the past, Caps have kind of been looking for a winger ever since that time to play with those two. There have been seven or eight different guys that have had that chance this year to play off top. Some have had some success. Nobody has come in and blown the doors off. If there was a guy out there And, you know, this is maybe this is just in theory or more than it is in practice since he's played with Washington before and it didn't go very well. But I think the team is different and he's different now. And that's Jaromir Jagr, a guy who on that right side who's going to take the puck and hold on to it and play in a different role and feed the other two guys. Boy, he might look pretty good here. I don't know. I think he could be. I think there's a lot of other guys out there. But, you know, the way they've been playing, I mean, I think it's a tough decision for Brian McClellan right now. The team is playing pretty well. You're only 5 points out of first place. What do you think you need to add without disrupting team chemistry? That's definitely above my pay grade, but it's a good problem to have, I guess, because it means a lot's going right here.
John Walton is the play-by-play broadcaster on the Capitals Radio Network. John, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for doing this, and enjoy tomorrow night's Capitals-Jets game.
You bet, fellas. Great to chat with you.
Thanks, John. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Big thank you to John Walton for joining us. Some great insight into the Washington Capitals. This segment of the show is brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom made mouth guard is a must have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Drew, I know you want to get back to the puck and preview the Jets Caps coming up, but I got to give a shout out. We have a few listeners listening in Mexico right now, actually.
Wow.
On the beach.
Nice.
I just got an email from my dad. He's in Cabo right now.
Nice.
He says, we'll be listening, drinking a couple of Coronas, so I'd like to say hi to my dad and his partner, Debbie, who
are drinking Coronas, apparently.
And it's plus 28 there, by the way, right now. So I just wanted to say hi and just make everyone else feel bad that we're in Winnipeg right now, and it's minus 40 outside, and it's plus 28 there. So
I think actually,
love you, Dad.
I think minus 40 would be a little warm. I think it's closer to like minus 45 or something. But yes, it is miserable out there, but stay warm around your radio as we'll start breaking down the Capitals-Jets game tomorrow night. Game you can hear, of course, live here on TSN 1290. Watch it on TSN 3 on your television. First time we've seen the Capitals this year. We're going to see them twice in the span of the next month. I think they're here March 21st.
They are.
For a Saturday.
As long as it's
not
back-to-back home games.
It's not back-to-back home games. You're right.
Is that the lockout year? That was the lockout year, right?
That was the lockout year. That's right.
When the that was a dark day at the MTS Center.
On that Friday and Saturday night, what was the score? 12-1 cumulatively? Something like that. It was pretty bad. You know, what's the key to tomorrow night's Jets-Capitals game? You know, is it saying, you know, entering into the mindset, you know, we're not going to let Ovechkin and Backstrom beat us. They might get their points, but we're going to sort of try and neutralize them as much as possible.
Well, I mean, sure, Drew. I mean, that's the obvious one, right? You have to, of course, take away their best players. One thing you don't, and again, another obvious statement you're going to make here is don't take penalties because you're dealing with this power play and
the second best in the league.
I mean, there's a reason why, because you have to either play on top of Alex Ovechkin or give him his best one-timer in the league. Maybe, I think P.K. Subban's probably number one one-timer, but Ovechkin's two. Weber's up there, too. But, I mean, you're talking, you know, it's this or that. They're tremendously talented. Backstrom is a great player. So I think your first thing is how do you want to match up with the top line? So never mind the penalties, and obviously, so you mentioned, Drew, the top line. Well, you know, Jacob Trouba, I don't think has had his best lately, but I think that you want to match up the Trouba-Stewart combination against Ovechkin, take away the speed and the space. I think that you're likely going to play a little bit of Myers-Enstrom against them too. You don't have last change. Tyler Myers has done some nice things with the puck. I didn't actually love his game on Monday, but he got a star in any event, but I didn't love his game.
Nobody played that well on the Jets.
Yeah, it was a little bit off, but you know, I think that's the matchup that I would go with, which is probably not a surprise if people listen to the show regularly. And then, you know, if you're the Jets, taking advantage of Washington on the back end is not as easy as it once was. But at the same time, and they're bigger on the back end with Orpik and Meaner. I think he leads the league in hits, and he's certainly more difficult to play against. Carl Alzner isn't easy to play against either. And the other guys they have can move the puck. But size up front is going to be an edge for the Jets because Washington still, you know, their top lines. I mean, Ovechkin can be physical, but you have Kuznetsov and Johansson and Burakovsky. So there's some guys that you can push around a bit, play a little more physical. You want to make them defend.
And so what you want to do is you want to get the puck in deep and keep it there for a while. And you have big guys, you know, Wheeler and Byfuglien, and Scheifele's not a small guy. And so you have some guys up that you can take advantage down low and make Washington defend. Because transition, you watched yesterday Ovechkin's, the turnover for Ovechkin's goal. Transition, they're quick. Like a 1-2, boom. And I just think this is a lot more difficult team to play against than before, and it's not going to be an easy game for the Jets. They're going to have to make sure that they get the proper matchup. So you saw the fourth line get some play against Edmonton there, against an awful Edmonton team. I'd be very surprised to see the fourth line play much at all. And they're going to lean on their big horses here, especially after a few days off. I wouldn't be surprised if the first and second line log significant minutes against a team in Washington that has quite a bit of firepower on the top line especially.
Yeah, Richie, you've touched on some really good points. And I think the key for the Washington Capitals this year, and you know, we asked John Walton about it. You, in fact, Richie, asked John Walton about it. There's more structure to the game. There's more of an identity to this mm-hmm. team. Barry Trotz has brought that, and that's what one of the best coaches really of the last 20 years can bring to a team. And, you know, I was talking off air with Richie, you know, I thought that the Caps would struggle this year. But Brooks Orpik and Matt Niskanen have done what they were supposed to do when they were signed to those contracts, and they've really solidified that defense. And I think Carl Alzner, Richie mentioned, very underrated defenseman, doesn't mm-hmm. get a lot of points. He's a former first-round pick, and you know, he's, I think, 26 years old now, 27 years old. He's kind of slowly developed, but I mean, that's what happens with defensemen. And you know, Mike Green, you know, he's still a very good offensive defenseman, still a guy who seems to always be the subject of trade rumors.
The key with Green now is you don't have to play him as a defenseman right. in terms of like against really top players on the other
right.
side. You're able to play him in yeah. offensive situations and be able to use his strengths. Will use his offense as a strength and avoid using his defense, which is a weakness, against other teams' top players. I mean, they're better structured. They're the depth. And that's why I asked the question, as on that point, you know, okay, about Washington. Well, I mean, they have roles now. Their third line, which John Walton spoke about, Brooks like Eric Farron Ward. They can be physical. You know, maybe not their fastest. Maybe some of those guys, Brooks like and Eric Farron, maybe he's. Well, Eric Ferrer definitely skates better now than he did in Winnipeg, but Brooks Like has lost a bit of a step because of injuries and such. But they're smart, and they can score a bit, they can hit a bit, they can do a bunch of things. You know, you look at their fourth line, I mean, Jay Beagle works hard, Tom Wilson is a tough guy, Lattice tough, so there you have roles, yep. right? Top guys score.
Yep.
And the second line is where I think they want to improve, and I think that's what John Walton was alluding to. But and that's one thing you might want to, if the Jets can get some secondary scoring, maybe take advantage of that lack of offensive depth at times for Washington. But it's not an easy matchup, and the days of going into Washington and not feeling it physically after the game, I think, are behind you right now.
Richie, if the Jets can play like they did, I thought against Detroit, they opened it up a little bit too much.
Yep.
If they can play the way they played against Nashville, I think we all
yes,
agreed that
yeah,
Pekka Rinne stole that game.
The
Jets played a really smart road game in Nashville. If they play like that, they play within their structure, they can do that. And, you know, especially with Buff moving up to forward, and we expect, I guess, it's either probably Adam Party that's going to come
yeah.
into the lineup.
Hmm. Jay Harrison's healthy again.
Jay Harrison, so it's one of those two guys. They're coming into the lineup. You got to play a structured game. Richie already mentioned it earlier. They got to stay out of the penalty box. They've done better lately at mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. Washington, I mean, this is a team that year after year seems to be, you know, a top power play team.
Well,
yeah, and you're always
going
right? to have that with Ovechkin, right, Richie? So I mean, you got
Backstrom.
Backstrom,
unbelievable player.
You got to stay, and that was the pass to Joel Ward was beautiful yesterday. Cross crease pass.
So he's top five passer in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
Well, he's leading the league. He's leading the NHL in assists.
Top five passer.
I think he's probably. You know, he's not underrated, but he's probably underappreciated for everything that he does.
He's underrated in the sense that you know, he happens to play behind Alexander
yeah,
Ovechkin, right?
Fair.
So I mean, the Jets got to play, and you know, again, I think it's a tough matchup. I'm not saying that the Jets can't win this, and you know, based on the way the Jets have been playing the last couple weeks here, I wouldn't be surprised if this is another one goal game and it goes to overtime, because the Jets seem to be going
that.
To overtime every
yeah.
single game.
They'll take it.
Oh, of course they'll take it. This is a skilled team, but I agree with Richie. The Capitals, even though they've got players like Brooks Orpik, and then on forward you've got guys like Joel Ward and Tom Wilson and Latta, some physical guys, but for the most part the Jets are a bigger and more physical team. You can take advantage of that, wear it down, and you know, use the cycle game to hopefully get some chances that way. That's what you got to do. And you know, we don't know who's going to start in goal. We haven't even talked about that, which is amazing. But regardless of who starts in goal, you know, you got to have one of those you know, road games where you do whatever you have to win the game.
Did Pomeroy say the other day that the goalie rotation was a function of the schedule?
I believe he did.
I can't even keep track of what he's talking about. The goalie rotation, it's this reason, it's that reason. I mean, if you play Hutchinson a few games in a row, that's fine.
I think he goes with Hutchinson and then Pavlik plays in Toronto.
I think the goalie rotation is a result of playing a Thursday but not a Friday, but a Saturday but maybe not a Sunday.
Yeah. I don't know that he necessarily will. It's a good question. I'm not sure what he's going to do for tomorrow. But really, you know what?
He'll spin the goalie rotation wheel.
That's
Maggie the Monkey
tool.
Will come in.
Maggie the Monkey will come and make the predictions too. Alrighty. Remus is telling me that Pavlik's starting tomorrow. Is that true, Remus?
I think so.
Oh, do you actually know that, or are you just... Okay, Remus is saying... Oh, that's true. Hutchinson did have a maintenance day today, so that might give you some sort of insight into what's happening. Or we'll just blame Remus for giving us bad information Saturday.
Doesn't necessarily mean that Pavlik's starting, but...
Well, you know, with Remus playing the job of Wade Flaherty here, I'm sure we can defer to him with whatever advice he has.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Josh Cooper from Yahoo Sports is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. There's nothing worse than unwanted surprises, like finding out your favorite player just got traded, or getting internet overage charges. But MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome from Yahoo's Puck Daddy, Josh Cooper. Josh, there's no reason to be horrified. We're always gentle. The only thing we're going to ask you is, what's your favorite deli meat?
I gotta go with lean corned beef. Though I've sort of taken a hankering to pastrami these days. I don't know. There's something about it that's really good.
Okay,
Josh, how's married life?
Good. Very, very fun. So enjoying every moment of it.
Is the snowstorm in Nashville subsided? Are you guys hanging in there? Or is it still coming down?
Okay, so here's the thing, guys. Like, I know that everyone in Winnipeg's probably laughing at the way we're handling this ice storm, and you guys probably should laugh at it, but this city is so ill-prepared for it. It's just ridiculous. It's like, it's been 2 days, and my sidewalk is still ice. I mean, it's just like, I can't walk without, like, you know, just falling right on my butt. I mean, it's just, it's awful. I have been through three, like, generational weather swings in this town, like, over the last 4 years. And you would think they'd be prepared for this. But no, no one's prepared at all. But I did check the weather in Winnipeg. It is slightly warmer there, or slightly colder there than it is here, even though everyone here is now freaking out about the cold. In fact, I think school has been canceled this entire week due to ice storm and cold.
It has. My in-laws informed me that school was canceled. They're up in Kentucky, of course, and my in-laws informed me that school's been canceled and everything else. So we had a little bit of a chuckle about that back here.
I figured you would. It's my cousins here are teachers, and they've just been home all week.
Not a bad way to go.
Now it's like, and now the roads are mostly clear, but it's still canceled, so... whatever.
Yeah, well, fortunately, it's nice and warm in Los Angeles, so you got that to look forward to.
Yeah, look forward to moving there and providing you some insight on those teams when I get out there, so that should be fun.
Exactly. Let's get to the game that's happening actually on the ice, where it's supposed to be icy, that is. The Predators made the big trade, acquiring Cody Franzen and Mike Santarelli from the Leafs. You know, does this trade, to your mind, increase their ceiling in terms of the Stanley Cup playoffs?
I think they're a better team now than they were before the trade, but I still think they're a first-line center away from being a team that is a real competitor. I still think, and Mike Ribeiro has been a great value for them. There's no question about that. I think he's making like $1.05 million this year, and he's almost a point-per-game player, but I just don't see him matching up really well against Jonathan Toews and Anze Kopitar and Ryan Getzlaf and all the other big-name centers in the Western Conference. I did a piece on Puck Daddy about all the different teams that have won the Cup since the 04-05 lockout and their first-line centers. And really, the only team that kind of matches that would be Anaheim. But they also had Timu Solani, who was still playing really well. They had Niedermeyer. They had Chris Pronger. I mean, they had all sorts of tremendous pieces on that team. So I still think they need to make a move for a first-line center, and it doesn't sound like they're going to. But also, not a lot of guys are on the market right now anyway. But, I mean, for example, I think that, I mean, I look at the Preds right now, and I think, well, if they end up playing Winnipeg in the first round, I mean, I could see Tyler Myers just manhandling that first line and just all those big guys on the Jets. So, I mean, I think the Preds are a really good team right now, but I still think they're not really kind of big and strong and powerful enough in certain positions to make that major run.
Josh, we're going to get into some specific players with you on the Predators, but you know, before we get to those specific players, you look at the Predators here. They've won six games in a row. They're first in the Western Conference. They're first in the National Hockey League. Are you at all concerned that heading into the playoffs, they haven't faced any adversity and things are almost going too well?
They did face a little adversity when Pekka got hurt, and I think that was a good thing for them because they were able to buckle down. They played a bit of a tighter system because Rene, with how good he is, enables him to play a pretty loose system, and I think that showed them they could win those tight, close games where maybe things aren't going 100% their way, but they've also played a lot of games at home of late, and I think that lent to their record being what it is at the moment. I think they need to kind of get out back out on the road and experience that adversity level, just because when you're home, I think, you know, pretty much they've been home almost the entire month, with the exception of one or two games. You get almost too comfortable, and that building, Bridgestone Arena, where they're playing right now, they have some sort of bizarro voodoo going on in that place where they're just winning every game, and it's just not even close. It's like they get ahead, and they know they're going to win. Even when they lost to the Ducks a few weeks ago, I think they scored a goal, and it was like 4-0 or whatever, and they scored a goal and make it 4-1, and you're just like, wow, these guys could come back. And then it's like 4-2, and then like, wow, this actually really could happen. But I mean, it didn't, but there's this strange belief that once they step on that ice in that building, and it doesn't matter if it's a packed house or what it was like last night, where there was apparently 8,000 people there. I wasn't at the game because I was horrified at the ice-stricken roads. But it doesn't matter, you know, how many people are there. They're still, you know, winning, and they're still playing exceptionally well. And I think that there's just something going on with this team this year that's unexplainable, that's lending all this success right now.
Josh, the players of the Predators acquire here, Cody Franz and Mike Santorelli, both have history. Both were drafted by the Predators, developed by the Predators. How much of a factor was that in terms of familiarity and what are the personalities known as in terms of the locker room?
Well, it's certainly been a talking point for them. I think a lot of that has to do with the spin factor of the last time they made a really, really big deal, they got a guy in Andre Kostitsyn who didn't fit in at all with this team. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a major reason why they've kind of been spinning it as, oh, you know, these are two guys who know the culture here. The culture is totally different now here than it was when they were there with the Predators. I mean, Mike Santorelli did not fit in Barry Trotz's system at all, and had to get out of Nashville in order to realize his offensive talent. Cody Franzen was a solid player here, who was also a developing defenseman at that time. He was really young. I think he was 23 or 24 when he was traded. I think he was 23. So I think that it's a nice talking point the team has sort of thrown out there as spin, but I don't think it's going to ultimately play a major role. I think what does play a major role is the fact that they're both good character guys. Santorelli is the super nice dude, and Cody Franzen, I've had the pleasure of working with him in terms of covering him back when he played for the Preds and sort of kept up with him with the Leafs, and just another solid character guy. And I think that's what's going to help more than anything, is just that they're two good guys that you're sitting in the lineup who are very coachable.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Josh Cooper from Yahoo's Puck Daddy.
Josh, I remember last time we had you on, you were a little bit, you were concerned that we didn't ask you about Colin Wilson, because we've seemed to ask you about Colin Wilson every time you're on the show over the last 5 years that we've had you on. But Colin Wilson, he's having a career year this year. He's got 18 goals, 38 points. What, I guess, has been the major reason, in your opinion, why he's having such a much better year than he was last year?
I have to say, I cannot go on the radio in Winnipeg without getting a Colin Wilson question. Like, it just, it always has to happen. But the major difference is, and you know, I think it's pretty well known how much I like Barry Trotz as a coach. I think he's an excellent coach, and I think what he's done with Alex Ovechkin this year has been just absolutely marvelous, and it's been so much fun to watch, watching Ovi just become this villain. But I can answer that question at some other point. But in terms of Colin Wilson, Winnipeg's own, he's just able to play freely and not have to worry about the 200-foot hockey game that Trotz wanted all his forwards to play. I mean, he can go out there, he can make a mistake in the defensive zone and not think that it's the end of the world for him. I think that's a huge factor for him in just being able to know that he's not on a short leash, that the leash is a little bit longer, and he can sort of make those mistakes and still keep playing through them. And I think for a young offensive player, that's so important in your development, to not lose that level of confidence, to not lose self-belief. And I think that he's been able to better do that this year with Peter Laviolette, who's been much more willing to give people like Colin Wilson and Craig Smith a longer leash to make those mistakes and still keep playing.
Josh, talk about some of your concerns in terms of, you know, Mike Ribeiro matching up against other first-line centers, which I would agree with that concern. Do you see the Predators, and now obviously having traded a first-round pick, do you see the Predators adding anybody else of significance down the stretch here?
They said no. They said they're done, which, again, I wrote the story about this on Puck Daddy, is just if they win the Stanley Cup, you can make an argument it'll be the worst center tandem since the 2004-05 lockout to win the Stanley Cup. And, I feel like a broken record saying this, but, I do think that's an issue. But, yeah, I mean, it sounds like they are done. And I think that, you know, while it would be nice for them if they got that first-line center, I don't know if one's out there also. So, I mean, that could be another issue as well. It's just you've seen some big moves. You've seen the big trade with the Jets and the Sabres, the Evander Kane deal. You've seen this Cody Franz and Mike Santarelli deal. And I hear a lot of people sort of bemoaning, oh, it's going to be the most boring trade deadline ever. Well, it's been pretty exciting so far. So yeah. Just because the deadline day is boring doesn't mean that the whole trade deadline period doesn't have to be boring. And I think it's been, I think just based on the types of trades that have been made, that there's really not much left out there for them to get.
In terms of big picture, you know, Josh, you look at Cody Franz and, you know, right side guy, obviously the Predators we said earlier are familiar with, but you have Seth Jones and you have obviously Shea Weber, and it appears Ryan Ellis could be back in a week or two, whatever it may be. How do you think they're going to line up, and is there any chance that with that many guys on the right side, similar to kind of how Winnipeg's been, that they sign Franz in the offseason?
Well, it's funny because I look at the way the Preds are kind of the way they're built, and I almost think, well, geez, why not trade Ellis and try to get sort of that top-end forward through that deal and just re-sign Franzen, just because they're both right-handed shots. Franzen's only a few years older than Ellis, and Franzen's better, so, and he's bigger, too. But, I think that, I mean, they said they're going to try to talk to these guys' agents about what's going on. I mean, I at the end of the day, unless they're able to unload another one of those right-handed D, and Ellis would clearly be the most obvious person to deal, because they're not trading Seth Jones, they're not trading Shea Weber, I don't see them keeping Franzen. Someone's going to give him $6 million this summer, at least $6 million. He's the only big-time free agent on the market, and when you get dealt like that and your name is all over all these, all these websites and newspapers or whatever, I mean, it creates sort of a level of, a buzz around the guy. And I think that there is that with him right now. And I think he's going to cash in mightily this summer.
Josh, we'll let you go on this last question. We've asked a lot about Cody France. And in your mind, Mike Santorelli, where's he going to fit into this forward group, and how do you think that Peter Laviolette's going to use him?
He will fit in better than Ole Jokinen, who has clearly taken it upon himself to rip the Predators at every chance he can.
Yeah, Mrs. Jokinen, too.
Yeah, and use the Toronto media to his advantage. And I know Ole played in Winnipeg, and I mean, I almost feel bad for the guy. I think he's played, what, six playoff games in his entire career, and he's like 35 years old or something like that. I mean, it's kind of, I mean, it's almost comical, and you have to sort of wonder, is it just Ole signed in the wrong places, or does Ole just not play winning hockey? Who knows? But I think Santorelli will fit in a lot better than Ole did. I mean, he's a better player at his age right now. He's younger. He's faster. He's one of the faster guys in the league. He can chip in both offensively, and is a solid defensive player. Can play wing and center. He's almost just kind of like a better version of Ole. So, and I seriously hope Ole or Mrs. Ole didn't hear me say that, because, I mean, I don't want to incur the wrath of them, because it seems like they're on, you know, a two-person wrecking crew right now against all things, you know, against Ole. But I think Santorelli's going to fit in really well with the Preds, and I think it's just basically going to be just a better version of Ole Jokinen.
Josh Cooper covers the National Hockey League for Yahoo's Puck Daddy. Josh, appreciate your time.
That is a nice ring to it. Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
As always, Josh, we'll talk soon. Take care, buddy.
Take care.
Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Past 8 in the evening, you're listening to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Josh Cooper for joining us. Big thanks to John Walton on the Capitals Radio Network joining us before that. If you missed either of those interviews, they're available on our website, on iTunes, and on TSN1290.ca.
You know, probably didn't. I know you want to get right to it here, but you know, you probably didn't know the connection here between what Remus is playing, because I'll give you the connection.
No,
Josh Cooper's moving to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Queens of the Stone Age are from L.A.
That's not intentional.
That definitely wasn't.
Josh Cooper's also a big...
Was that intentional, Remus?
Big Springsteen fan, and Remus played STP into the interview.
It was Soundgarden. And we play Springsteen...
Sure, it wasn't STP?
It was Soundgarden Outshined, okay?
No, I'm talking about the song we just played.
Oh, right now?
No, that was Queens of the Stone Age. I thought you were talking about last segment for Josh Cooper.
What was STP?
I never played STP.
You're just going to dismiss that.
No STP tonight?
Sorry, dude.
Really?
Yeah, you're off.
Can we go back to the audio?
Like, can we rewind the show right now?
Some people would probably like that.
Sure, you guys completely just buzzkilled that.
Well, your thing wasn't very good to begin with.
What were you doing with that?
He's moving to California, Queens of the Stone Age from California. But I'm trying to find the connection there.
There's no connection. It was the song that's in my folder, so I picked it.
I know you didn't know. I know you didn't know there was a connection. I'm saying that is a connection.
Remus is ornery because we're on an hour later and he's missing his hockey game.
That is true.
Watch the Foo Fighters documentary. It's all about Queens of the Stone Age jamming in California, the desert sessions. He's moving to California.
Can I do a promo here?
I've actually seen Queens of the Stone Age play live 4 times.
I think I've seen them twice. Yeah, really good band.
I think I've seen them twice. Yeah. I saw them at the Bird. I was really impressed.
Yeah, I was at that Bird show.
I got, you know.
Anyways.
Remus is pretty sour today.
Yeah, we just told you why. Give him a soother. That's
unbelievable.
Funny. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, where you can definitely find better comedy than what we just displayed on air. Officially declared by us as the funniest place in Winnipeg. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Ian Bagg at Rumors all this week until Saturday, so be sure to get your tickets to see Ian. He's been selling out all the shows, rumorscomedyclub.com for tickets and a list of performers, of course. Let's talk about that Leafs-Predators trade that went down Sunday morning. Guys, you know, obviously this is supposedly the official start to the Leafs rebuild. Let's talk about the Nashville perspective to begin with, because they're the actual team that's, you know, leading the NHL, whereas the Leafs are, like you said, Richard, a joke, competing with the Oilers for the joke in the NHL. Yeah. So from the Nashville perspective, Franzen and Santorelli, does this change, you know, I asked Josh the question when we started the interview, does this change their ceiling in your mind?
No, not really.
Because they're already at the top.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, let's
be honest.
Well
played, Ezzy. Well played.
That is well played. But I mean, if the Stanley, you know, if the Nashville Predators came out of the West and made it to the Stanley Cup Finals, you'd probably admit, even though they're atop the league right now, you'd be surprised.
No, Rich, I think the Predators have the best defense in the NHL. I think they had one of the best defenses in the NHL without Cody Franzen, who, was, as you mentioned, was drafted by the Predators. It just makes this defense even better.
It does. I don't know if that's their need, though, Ezzy. I mean, Ryan Ellis, I realize, doesn't have the same
underrated
size and physicality.
Good defenseman, though.
Doesn't have the same size and physicality, and you worry about him in the playoffs and things like that. Okay, fine. But, I mean, they're adding a guy on the back end when they already have a pretty good back end, and they're adding Santarelli, who's fine, who's helpful, who's useful. But, like Josh said, you know, they're going up in the big games, and it's going to be Cullen and Ribeiro and,
Fisher.
Fisher, yeah, I mean, Fisher's tough to play against. He's a great third line center, but are those other guys your first two in a playoff series different than the regular season? So I don't get me wrong. Pekka is going to be the reason they make any run at all. And no apologies for that if you're a Predators fan. But they, out of any team, like if I'm a Jets fan right now, I'd rather play Nashville than Chicago, St. Louis, or Anaheim in the first round.
And Richie, they gave up a first round pick.
David Poile makes kind of weird decisions that way. Like, remember whoever he traded for Peter Forsberg years ago, but even traded a first round pick for Paul Gostad. Mm-hmm. So he trades first round picks for like not difference makers to me. And I like Cody Franzen's game. I think he has a lot of good attributes. I don't think he'll play enough to necessarily demonstrate those attributes to equal the value that they gave up for him. I think his qualities are kind of redundant on that back end to an extent. Like, don't get me wrong, he's more physical. He doesn't skate as well as Ellis, but he's more physical. He's got a big shot. He's offensive. He's smart. But and I like his game, and he's really he's a second pairing right side guy. But you have Seth Jones. So then you're improving your depth, but then where's Ellis playing? And again, Ellis isn't the biggest part of the squad, but he's a good player, moves the puck well, skates, a smaller guy. But I just think they had other needs that they could have addressed with that pick, put it that way. So I don't love the move. It's kind of an odd move to me. And if I'm in Toronto, I heard some people say, you know, if they trade Santarelli and Franzen separately, and I've heard that about Kane and Bogosian as well, I don't necessarily buy that. You get a first-round pick, and I know it's going to be 30th, 28th, 29th, around there. That's a deep draft, and you weren't going to re-sign those guys. And if you were going to re-sign those guys, you were going to re-sign them to money that was overvalued to me. And you've already signed a bunch of guys to, you know, above market contracts. You can't keep doing that. You can't keep signing guys because you don't want to lose them, even though you don't want them.
Yeah, and I think I can see the thinking behind the trade. And I know what you're saying, Richie. Now you almost have to squeeze Ellis out of the lineup. I believe he has played on the left side, though.
Sure, but like, do you want him playing as a smaller guy left side? I don't know.
Well, I'm just saying you're basically looking at the Predators' defense. You're a guy like Victor Bartley. Is he improvement over is Cody Franzen an improvement over a guy like Victor Bartley or Boteto, who's obviously playing because Ellis is injured? Of course he is, right? But you're saying, is that you're taking a defense that has few holes, and now you're almost
like you got
having
an
issue with, now you have a good defenseman that might have to come out of the lineup because he's a side guy. I can see that.
Yeah, and I just also like they just need forwards. I mean, they need bigger forwards, I think. So that's my opinion.
Right. But again, I think you know, to get back to Drew's question, your defense has gotten better by the addition of a guy like Cody Franzen. And you guys know I've always liked him. You know, he has his few issues defensively, but the guy is a big, solid defenseman, very good offensively. He's, you know, Josh Cooper.
But do they need that, though?
Well, you know, you can make the argument, can you ever have enough really good right-side defensemen?
They're the number one team in the NHL. No. They're the number one team in the NHL, and are they, you know, like I said, at the beginning, if the playoffs come and go, and they, you know, are they better than the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, in a seven-game series? I know that they're at the top of the league right now, but in a seven-game series, have they done enough to make themselves better than the Chicago Blackhawks?
They certainly haven't up the middle.
Yeah, I mean, I still think they have a chance to beat any team in the league. I think they're right up there in terms of any.
You have the
chance.
Best goalie in the league, and in our opinion, you agree with this, you have the best defenseman in the league.
Yeah. So Shea Weber or Doughty, I think, are probably the two
right,
best.
But if you're going to use a first-round pick, I mean,
now remember, it's 30th, so if somebody trades a second-round pick at the trade deadline, and they're at the bottom of the, you know, they're the...
I'm talking 10 picks there. Of course. Yeah, yeah. But if you're going to use Brendan Leipzig in a first-round pick, don't you want to upgrade more of a concerning area than simply your defense?
I personally would have. I didn't like the trade for Nashville. I just thought it was, you're trading assets to add redundant qualities on your team when there are other needs.
Well, you mentioned doing separate deals or something along those lines. Let's say you know if you call up Toronto and you offer them that first round pick, without including Brandon Leipzig and without, you know, talking about Mike Santarelli, are you getting Cody Franson just for that first round pick?
Probably.
Okay, and then if you take Brandon Leipzig and you auction him off to another team in the league, let's say Arizona, are you getting Antoine Vermette for Brandon Leipzig?
No, I don't think so.
But are you getting somebody better than Mike Santarelli, let's say, for
it's
Brandon
possible.
Leipzig?
It's possible, yeah.
So, I mean, it almost seems like that David Poile, you know, may have maybe overpaid for
the two
guys.
You also don't know
the
what they think internally of Brandon Leipzig. I mean,
you also
again,
have to factor
people are commenting on Brandon Leipzig, never seen him play. I mean, that's why I'm not commenting, because right. I haven't seen him play. Do I think they can get more? Maybe, but I haven't seen him play, so how can I comment
on
that?
He's a good Jewish boy from Winnipeg. So.
Yeah, I know that, but I haven't seen him play.
No, I know.
Doesn't mean anybody's calling us to trade for us.
Former Jewish Athlete of the Year, but that's for another show. But
what show is that for?
Apparently the Jewish Athlete of the Year show?
Remus, get in here. I think we nominated Remus last
segment. When you talk about this trade, though, Drew, I see what you're saying. A first-round pick, even if it's a late first-round pick, it's still a first-round pick. We know those are very valuable. To me, you have to factor in here that Cody Franson, as a UFA, Richie, to me, this is, you know, you might disagree with this, but if you're giving up a first-round pick, you have to think that there's a pretty good chance that they want to re-sign Franson. Because why do you give away that first-round pick to make a small upgrade on your defense, right?
And overpay Franson in free agency. I don't get it. It's an odd move. And because it's the Leafs, everybody's breaking it down left, right, and center, and we get to overanalyze Cody Franson's game, which I've said consistently that I like. I mean, it's not about flaws here, guys. It's paid $6 million bucks in the offseason. I think that's ridiculous. But
do you doubt he's going to get it?
No, I don't. I think he'll probably get it. I think but truth be told, he's probably in this market, although the cap might not go up, 4.75 to 5 guy. But in the market in UFA, he'll be inflated. He'll get 6 probably.
You know, quickly here, I know back to Brandon Leipzig here, I know his dad, Greg, listens, a big fan of the Legal Curve show. He's been playing Brendan in Milwaukee. You know, it's a good move for him because, let's be honest here, you know, with Nashville, it's tougher to get into that lineup right now. You go to Toronto, you know, he's in his first pro year. You know, it's a good opportunity for him. He stays in Canada.
I totally agree with that, Ezzy. I mean, it's an opportunity for a younger player and a Winnipeg guy to carve out a niche in an environment that likely will change over the course of the offseason, you'd hope.
Probably a Leafs team that's not going to have a ton of pressure on it next year because, you know, the talk about the rebuild, and it seems like they're finally going to go ahead and go through with it.
Olli Jokinen and the attention that Olli Jokinen gets from the Toronto media, to me, again, is laughable. I don't understand it. And then
he's talking about negative energy.
Well, I mean, it's negative energy there. That's true.
The guy's played 5 playoff games his entire career. Maybe he's the guy who brings negative
energy.
He
mailed in an entire season during the lockout.
I mean, but you listen to the attention that the Olli Jokinen gets in Toronto, and you realize how ridiculous it is playing in that market when people, let's audition Jokinen. Audition him for who? There's been a 15-year audition. I mean,
this is his last year in the NHL.
You turn on the TV and you watch the Olli Jokinen show. I mean, are we actually talking about Olli Jokinen? I mean, I know we're talking about him, but we're talking about them talking about him, not just talking about him.
If you
can follow that. No, seriously, I mean, have you watched a game? Have you watched an NHL game with Olli Jokinen in it over the past couple seasons?
But that's because they misused him in Nashville, Richard. He said it himself. The reason he's only got, you know,
They didn't use him. He was a healthy scratch.
No, and they misused him when he was playing on the wing. It's the Predators' fault. It's not Olli's fault.
I also heard this week that the Jets offered him, somebody said yesterday that the Jets had offered him to come back. I was surprised to hear that. I don't know if that's true. And then, of course, it's always a big red flag when Edmonton offers him the best deal.
Well, the best comment I heard was that he had 8 teams after his services this offseason. Then somebody said, yeah,
like
4,
to see that
4 in the KHL, 2 in the Finnish Elite League. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll look around at some of the other players rumored to be on the trade block. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Would you like to enlighten everybody as to why you're giggling, Richard?
Well, that's SDP now.
Yeah, because we just had however long that commercial break was, about 2.5 minute argument about whether or not Remus had already played STP tonight.
No, Soundgarden.
No, Richard said he played STP.
And he played Soundgarden.
He had played Soundgarden. Anyways, welcome back to the program. This segment is brought to you by Royal Sports.
Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online. Whew, easy for me to say. At royalsports.me.
That was a royal read there, Drew.
I think if Richie had a snowboard from Kings, he would hit Remus over the head with it.
I'd like to see Richie snowboarding. Have you ever skied even?
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
I'm not big into the mountains.
What is this, like a profile of Richie's like winter activities?
It's the Royal Rumble here right now.
Drew, have you done any skiing?
I have to go into Royal and get new gloves, though.
This is what happens when we're on an hour later. We get a little punchy.
The palm of my glove, I need to go into Royal and get new gloves.
Yeah. I don't like to ski because I don't want to break my back or break my... I like to stick to safe sports like hockey.
You know, I'm not a huge fan of heights in general, but I've skied before, and I was okay at it.
Did you do the slalom, the giant G or whatever it's called?
The giant slalom. But I was able to, you know, it's the same turn as a hockey turn. So, you know, as long as you can skate, you're familiar with it. My problem with it was I was never convinced that, you know, I was confident that I could stop if I needed to.
Right.
But I was never confident that the guy behind me,
yeah.
who's barreling down a mountain at however many miles per hour, is necessarily going to be able to stop.
That would be Richie on his skis coming in on Drew.
Except Richie would be coming with a spear to try and get me in the back. Though. That's exactly. The difference. It's like Richie incorporates javelin and skiing into a sport to try and get at me. That would be very mean of you, Richard. Why would you do that? Anyways, let's talk about some of the trade rumors from around the NHL. Florida Panthers, supposedly interested in Phil Kessel.
Supposedly says who?
Well, supposedly says the people that talk about this sort of thing.
Just who?
Well, this is the rumors, I think, came out of some of the insiders, as you were.
Basically, the Florida Panthers, I don't think, are interested.
Harvey
in
Fialkov, our good friend from the Florida Sun Sentinel, says the Panthers are interested in Kessel, but are not going to give up young studs to get him.
Yeah, basically what they're saying is, we'll take Phil Kessel. I'm assuming this is what they're saying. We'll take Phil Kessel. If you eat his contract, will you take back a bad contract? Sure, we'll take Phil Kessel.
I don't think Phil Kessel has a bad contract, though.
The problem is, with the uncertainty of the cap, that's an issue. I mean, I think that contract is tradable, and if he can produce just strict value based on his goals. I think people are worried about the locker room influence and things like that, and him being a number one guy. And that team, I love Nick Bjugstad, but on that team right now, he'd be close to number one guy, and they're worried about that and the role that he would play. So the only teams that are taking him are teams that are saying, first off, not many teams are taking him, and if Florida, you're saying, okay, kind of similar to the way Luongo was. Yeah, sure, we'll take him. If you take back this or you do that, or we're not paying anything for him, we're not giving you... You know, we're not giving you, certainly not giving a guy like Aaron Ekblad, but we're not giving you Huberto, we're not giving you Barkov by any means. No top guys. I mean, you're going to go down the totem pole there in terms of their prospects, and you can pick some guys and lower round picks and things like that. But you're not getting any big jackpot here. It's leverage, Drew. The Leafs don't have any leverage here.
Yeah, a few things. And Ray Ferraro talked about this last week on TSN Radio in Toronto. Phil Kessel's got a limited no-move clause, sure. So he controls where he can go. I think, was
go
there
anywhere.
Eight teams?
He wants to get the heck out of there, Ezzy.
No, but I'm just saying,
overblown.
Well, no, but that means that if Florida's not on that list, then it's, why are we even talking about it?
I think he wants out of there. I think he would go anywhere right now.
No,
but he can't go anywhere. If he consents to it,
you can always consent to your trade, but I'm saying that he
has a list of teams, right?
Right.
So we're just assuming... Florida is on that list, but I'm just saying
he wants to get the heck out of Toronto whatever it takes.
And he's willing to waive the no-trade clause that he has.
Go anywhere.
I'm just saying that's part of it.
Yeah, it is. It's a factor, but I just think that playing in Toronto, it's hell for him right now.
Yeah, he's having a terrible year. You're right. And especially with his comments, Richie, that he made last week, saying, oh, if it's here or whatever.
Well, I don't even
he sounds like
a
defeated guy, right?
He does sound like a defeated guy.
So I think, you know, Richie just touched on it. The Florida Panthers, right now, I think Phil Kessel would be an interesting fit there. I'm not saying, you know, that he's going to put them over the top, but you look at how young they are up the middle with, you know, Richie, you mentioned the young guys, Bjugstad and Barkov, who was a 2013 draft pick, and Bjugstad, another first-round draft pick. This is a team that is still in the playoff race. I don't know if they're going to catch Boston. It's going to be tough for them to catch Boston just because, you know, Boston's going to turn it on here towards the end of the season, but... You have to think the reason why they're getting Kessel is for that exact reason, to give up a prospect to get him. And Florida has the draft coming up, the 2015 draft this June. So to me, I don't know. I think that rumor is a little far-fetched.
Again, I think if you say, okay, you know, we'll give you blank, you retain some salary, and we'll give you a lower-end prospect some money back to take back. Yeah, we'll take Phil Kessel from you, but we're not giving you anything of value.
I appreciate your point. I just don't quite understand why people are... I mean,
Phil Kessel is a guy who scores in the top 10 of goals each and every year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's this year, you know, has obviously been a struggle, but that's a function of playing on a terrible team to some extent, I think. He's a guy who's going to get you between 30 and 40 goals a year, and it's the one thing that, you know, almost impossible to find in the NHL is goal scorers. If that guy's on the market, I'm willing to, you know, I don't know why you're not giving up a guy like Jonathan Huberdeau.
Okay, hold on, Richie, though.
Why are you giving up Huberdeau?
Because I don't think
he's going to... Is he going to make you a good enough team before you, you know, before you get to that point? I don't even necessarily love Jonathan Huberdeau.
Yeah.
But are you getting value for your dollar there when, you know, when you have other guys you're going to be paying coming up here?
Right. And they're
paying Bukestad, granted, but you know you're going to have big money contracts coming up, Ezzy. Eventually, Ekblad, you know, 2 years, is going to want to get paid. And Barkov, you're going to have to pay him. And do you want to, and you're already paying Dave Bolin. I mean, do you want to throw it into another guy? You know? I just don't think so. I see your point because he's a quality player.
Yeah. I think people overlook how much of a quality player he actually is.
I agree with that.
The issue here is Phil Kessel is having a year where he's just everything has gone wrong for him and the team, Drew. And you're right. I mean, Phil Kessel is a bona fide first line NHL player who's consistently and going to be in the top 20 at least of scoring. Mm-hmm. Not this year, but top 10 at least.
Top 10 goal scorer.
Right. So, but if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs and you know you're rebuilding, even though you're rebuilding, I should say, you're going to want one of the players that is currently playing in the NHL. So you're talking, they're not like, aside from the guys that are currently playing for the Panthers, you're talking guys like Jace Haraluk, who's a former Brandon Weeking, Rocco Grimaldi, Corbin Knight, who they acquired.
Those are guys are down the list.
Right, exactly. So if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you're still, if you're Dave Nonis, right, and Brendan Shanahan right now, you're probably asking for one of those guys. That's what I'm saying. So to say that the Panthers are interested in Kessel, but they're not willing to give up one of their top prospects, and those top prospects happen to be playing in the NHL. Again, the guys we're talking about, Barkov, Bukestad. So to me, you got to give up one of those guys, don't you?
I think you don't give up Barkov or Bukestad for sure, and I don't think those guys are untouchable. But I would certainly, if they said, you know, Huberdeau for Kessel, I would certainly consider it from Florida's perspective.
You might have to give up even more than that. You might have to throw in another prospect or draft pick.
I don't see Florida doing that at all. I just don't see, again, not anything of value. You can eat some contract, and you're going to be trading, you know, it could be some young players or draft picks, whatever it may be, but it's not going to be your top-end guy. It's not going to be the building blocks of the team. You're just not going to do that. And again, I see your point, but, like, who are you fighting with here? Like, who else is looking for that player?
That's a fair
point. So let's look around. Is Calgary sinking that much money into it? No. Is Edmonton going to add to that fire that's in Edmonton? No.
Probably.
Vancouver's building with a different, you know, youth and, you know, Vertanen and different guys that they've drafted, and Bo Horvat and Jared McCann. That's going to be kind of the future there. So Montreal's not going to be an option. I mean,
well, you're Ottawa. An established team, Richie, if you want Kessel.
That's the thing. And so who's going to, and then if you're an established team who wants Kessel, how much money do you have in the books already? You're adding a big contract, and it's for long term. You have other guys to sign. So sure, Phil Kessel in a vacuum is an attractive option. Phil Kessel with that massive contract, other players. Again, doesn't even mean the contract's the worst thing ever, though. The contract, you know, we can talk that. We've talked about that before. But the idea is, I mean, there's moving parts here at all times. And a cap that with the dollar, the big Canadian TV deal.
Yeah, didn't really do anything for the dollar.
Really, Richie, you're saying that the
especially
amount of
if the NHLPA does not use their 5% escalator option this year, the talk is they're not going to because of the ramifications that has on the escrow.
So, as Richie said, though, if there are less teams than you'd think were interested in Kessel, isn't that even more reason why? You're going to have to give up significant, and as Drew said, you know, you're talking about a top scorer in the NHL. You're not going to be giving up, you know, B prospects here to get
Kessel. If they only have one option of where he's going, they're not going to have to pay as much.
No, I think that if, I'm saying from Toronto's perspective to trade him.
Well, from Toronto's perspective, if you only
Kessel
have...
Kessel might want out of Toronto. That doesn't mean Toronto has to trade him.
No, you're right about that. But if there's only one, you know, or one or two markets that are really interested in acquiring him, Toronto doesn't have any leverage.
Drew, if you give up Kessel, and I realize there's a rebuild that's about to happen in Toronto.
Yeah.
But as we know, a rebuild doesn't want a 7-year Edmonton Oilers rebuild in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
If you give up Kessel, Richie, and you just, I'm throwing out names. If you give up, trade Kessel for B prospects, so you're talking Rocco Grimaldi and Trocheck or whatever it is, mm-hmm. pick any other team in their lower level prospects. You take Kessel off the Leafs and you don't replace him with guys that can potentially replace those goals. You're assuring you're going to be a terrible team for 3 or 4
years. Maybe that's what they want.
how ironic would it be if the Leafs do their tank the year after the McDavid and Eichel sweepstakes?
It's basically happening, Drew.
I know it is, but I mean unintentionally. This is like the Oilers, a number of years ago when they were thought that they were on the upswing and they actually they turned out to suck.
I wouldn't expect Kessel to get traded before March 2nd. I think if people are expecting him to get traded, I don't think it's going
to
happen.
You have to see with the cap. This is too big of a contract to be moved before then, and it's not like Evander Kane and my different and the exposure here and the amount of money you're paying and all those things. You're talking big dollars here, guys.
I wouldn't be surprised, Richie, if it happens in the summer or 2 years from now, but in the next 2 weeks with everything that's going on here, with the future of Dave Nonis uncertain, Dave Nonis not knowing what his future is, he's going to trade Phil Kessel, who he signed to the 7-year deal?
$8 million cap hit through 2022, and you're going to make a rush decision? No, I don't think so at all. I mean, the men, Kane and Myers and Bogosian, those guys aren't extending that long.
No.
And not at that cap hit. And they're younger than those. Wait, sure. He's 27. He's not that old, Kessel. But
one more name quickly: Roman Polak, supposedly coveted by the Los
Angeles
Kings.
Another Leaf to talk about.
Yeah, I know. Talk more about the Maple Leafs.
Well, your fortune. We're not talking about Tyler Bozak. Well, so Roman Polak, your buddy Eric DeHatchick, talking about that the Kings are coveting him.
He fits in. He would know. He fits in well. Drew, he's big. He's tough. Not the best skater, but that's most of LA, really. I mean, they've improved their skating, their speed with some of the young players they have, and they brought in Gabrick last year. But he fits in with the style of play that they want, and can be difficult to play against. And actually, when he gets into a shot, pretty big shot. But good player. But he's a third pairing right side guy, and they're looking for depth. I think they need a guy who can play at a little higher level offensively, frankly, and a little better of a skater to fit into the top four there. If you're looking at it. He could fit, but I still think they would need somebody else to play that spot. I just don't know if that player is available in the market, and if that's the case, then they might default back to him because of what's available. And I think that's smart management. You don't want to force it.
Right, and this isn't the last year of Polak's contract. He's got another year left on his contract. Richie, I don't see them moving Polak because of the fact that they just moved Franz in, so now you're already down one of your top
four. Oh, they're moving everybody, Izzy. They're trading for you at this point.
I'm number one overall pick in the Jewish hockey league.
I don't think Polak gets traded before the deadline.
Really? 2.7 this year, next year? I think they're going to try and cash in on whatever they can get. I think he goes for a third and a low-end prospect.
We'll see.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hang on. Are we in agreement on who sings this song?
Radio Nowhere. We're probably in agreement on if this is Radio Nowhere, too.
Okay.
Listen to the lyrics of this song.
Yeah.
Talking about us.
One final segment on this Wednesday evening. It's brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at notautocorp.com.
Did you know that when you buy a car of Not Auto Corp, Ezzy actually comes in the trunk? And you open it the first time, he just pops out at the dance and then runs away.
Oh, wow. I don't even... Yeah, I don't know.
Idea where you were going with that one. None whatsoever. That was something all right there. You guys talked about it on Saturday's show, the Tyler Seguin out 3 to 6 weeks. Kulikov suspended 4 games. Is that right?
I think if you go back and check the tape, I said I thought he'd get 5.
Okay.
So you say that, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean 4... Drew, it was dirty.
I watched it today for the first time.
It was
time.
Dirty.
I was like, what are you doing? That wasn't... You don't see that in...
Well, and
close to a hockey play.
Some people were saying Tyler Seguin should have been better set up for that. Kulikov premeditated that.
He just destroyed his legs. You don't see that.
I know he doesn't have the same value right now name-wise, and I understand that was Crosby and Ovechkin, but he's just as good as anybody right now.
That's
the best player in the league getting low bridge like that.
Yeah, so 4 games is fair. I thinking it would be 5, maybe 6. So the NHL.
If you want to protect your top guys, I could even see. The more I watch it, the more I don't like it. I would think there'd be more Ezzy, but you were pretty close on your first pick there.
They just don't giving away 10 for something like that without the precedent, I think, even though Kulikov has been suspended before, it's going to be tough.
When you never give suspensions, you never have the precedents.
Ducks, Anaheim Ducks. They lose Matt Bolesky for 2 to 4 weeks with an upper body injury. What? Sammy Vatanen, 4 to 6 weeks with a lower body injury. They're struggling a little bit. 3-5-1 in their last 9 games.
You know what that means, though? Josh Manson was called up. Eric Brewer is going to play. Emerson Eden was called up. So, I mean, it's going to give the opportunity. We saw Josh Manson earlier this season when Anaheim was in. I mean, you know, Vatanen, you're talking about a guy who plays on their top pair, Richie. And I know you really like him, but they've got some depth there. And obviously Cam Fowler and Lovejoy, that'll be their top pair. And, you know, we mentioned, you know, Josh Manson, son of Dave Manson, of course, former Jet, is going to get some opportunities. But because they've got the depth, they'll be able to handle it. But, you know, you talked about this, Drew. They have been struggling.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, the Ducks here, you know, the Predators, you almost think they might be pulling away a little bit too much for the Anaheim Ducks' comfort here. 7 points. Ahead of them, same thing with the Blues, are 6 points behind the Predators. But you know, the Ducks are, this is going to be tough for them, tough stretch for them here.
There's a couple of things here. The Ducks get hurt on the two positions that I think, you know, they have some issues in, and they're looking for a big time defense, and we know that. So they get hurt on the back end, that hurts them. Why? Because Sammy Vatanen moves the puck real well, real good skater, real good offensively. And, you know, it's a bit of a risky game, guys, but he helps in transition, and helps get it up to the big guys up front. And then you get her on the wings, and wing is where you also have a depth issue, or I think not even so much a depth issue, is because they have some guys, and you mentioned Emerson Eden, but just they're talent wise. And Matt Bolesky helps your forecheck. Matt Bolesky is a big guy. Matt Bolesky can play physical. Matt Bolesky can shoot the puck. Those are assets that you're not going to have there. So those are two big drawbacks. Now they both might be back for the playoffs, and you'll be okay. And really, that Pacific Division is awful this year in terms of, and it really is not very good. I mean, Anaheim is the best team in that division. But so you're going to have a loss, but Vatanen will hurt them more in terms of talent on the back end, especially when they have Anita. So these are not injuries to overlook on a team that you'll expect to add something, if not something big, at the deadline. I think they could surprise some teams with a big move.
Is Anaheim not as good as people are giving him credit for?
In a way, yeah. In ways that they aren't. You just worry if you're a team, and again, you know, Drew, that might sound fine and dandy, and Nashville might look real good, but when it comes down to it, in the first round of the playoffs, if you're the Jets, for example, and they'd play to Anaheim if the playoffs started today,
mm-hmm.
and you have to match up against Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaf every 3 shifts, good luck.
Well, no, I mean...
And Ryan Kessler's playing against Brian Little every shift.
No, no.
Good luck with that, too.
The Anaheim Ducks are still an unbelievable team. I mean, let's they've lost 7 games at home all year. When the Anaheim Ducks were here last, they were dominant over the Jets. Ryan Getzlaf, I think he had 4 points that game, didn't he? So, I mean, you're still talking about an extremely good team. But as Richie said, you get into matchups. And again, I agree with you. Anaheim, you know, presents a big challenge there up the middle. And guys like Emerson Edom and Devontae Smith-Pelly, they have lots of depth. Again, I don't think you should expect the Anaheim Ducks here to go into a huge tailspin. They've been struggling,
yeah,
absolutely. But you know, this is a team they play tonight. Yeah, they play tonight. They play Tampa tonight.
Yeah, they do play.
And John Gibson's going to get his third start in a row. And Frederik Andersen's coming back from his injury. You know, Gibson's done an admirable job coming. And Frederik Andersen, didn't he start 22, 23 games in a row there?
I like Frederik Andersen. I have no issue with
him. So, I mean, this is still a team I wouldn't want to play in the playoffs.
No. The most impressive part, I mean, the Ducks are 24-0-7 in one-goal games this year.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
That's a good thing and a bad thing. Good thing that you can play that well and that tight and when it matters, and bad thing because you're cutting it pretty close. But you also understand, Drew, that guys like Getzlaf and Perry, when they know they're in first in the division, do they have anything to play for right now?
No.
Not really. They don't care about personal awards. We know how much Ryan Getzlaf has won. Getzlaf and Perry.
Yeah, he reminded Alex Ovechkin about it.
Yeah, or somebody.
Somebody did. Yeah.
In any event, Drew, these guys know when push comes to shove, where their bread is buttered.
They got 25 games left and they can't wait for the playoffs to start because they're going to win the Pacific Division. I mean, there's no way Vancouver or Calgary are going to catch up to them.
No, exactly.
Out-of-town scoreboard quickly, mind you. Minnesota up 1-0 on Calgary 10 minutes into that game. So a game that Jets fans are certainly keeping a close eye on.
You don't want that game to go to overtime.
You just don't want that game to be a 3-point game. You're right. I mean, you don't... You know, you can arguably care about which team wins. You just don't want it to be a 3-point game more than anything. One final news and note from around the NHL quickly. Senators re-signed defenseman Mark Methot. 4 years, $19.6 million contract. Salary cap hit of $4.9 million per season.
Yeah, you know, reasonable. Ottawa's always going to overpay guys. He seems to always overpay guys. You know, Mark
Talking about Bobby Ryan?
Yeah, anyway, Mark Methot, your stay-at-home D-man. He plays well with Erik Karlsson, and you know, pretty smart defenseman. Uses long stick. He's a solid guy, Drew. I don't, you know, he's not going to give you the offensive production, but overall, you know, you're in the ballpark there. Probably, I'd say a little bit of an overpay, but nothing too crazy. He's a local boy too, right? And you give up Foligno. Look at Foligno there on the other side. So, you know, there's that element as well. I think the better news out of Ottawa, I think we'd all agree that Brian Murray may stay on a little
absolutely.
Bit longer, and that's terrific news.
Yeah, so. Feeling better, absolutely. That's it for this Wednesday and NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our guest Josh Cooper from Yahoo Sports and John Walton, play-by-play broadcaster of the Capitals. In case you missed any of it, you can download it on iTunes, on illegalcurve.com, or on tsn1290.ca. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with your latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Michael Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 12 noon, we wish you a good night and good luck.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.